Something I think about a lot is one of my very first businesses was Brain to Books, the cyber convention. And there was absolutely nothing like it. I launched this in 2015 in a solution that I had. I had just finished my books. I was writing from 2006 to 2015. And in 2015, I went online, I was on Twitter at that time, and I saw all the authors all doing the exact same thing. We all were one voice, lined up side by side, buy my book, buy my book, buy my book. And I saw people going through, and it very much felt like a bazaar where people walked by and it was buy my book, no thanks, buy my book, no thanks, buy my book. I thought that's really, really, we're all spending the same energy to say the same message, but we're competing without meaning to compete. And I'm thinking one person goes by, we're all in the same group. And I thought, you know, we did the statistics, we ran the analytics. Everyone knows this, that a person has to hear the same message X amount of times. So you have to read or you have to see an ad X amount of times before you'll buy that one book. But I said, what if we were to accumulate our marketing, literally compile our marketing under one message, we are here, and then do like a full indie author showcase. And that's exactly what we did. We were the very first indie author showcase. There was no such a thing before Brain to Books. 2015, and we built this giant online expo. We started off with 12, 15 authors, and then we were 150 authors. Then we were 800 authors, and we all brought our massive book following and audience. And something else happened during that time period. I watched all these people, introverts, come out of their shells. I watched introverts night after night break down, crying, telling me how isolated they were, how lonely they were, and how Brain to Books provided them with family, with kin. And I was focused on the delivering what I had marketed to them, which was with what we're doing, you're going to see an increase in book sales. So when I didn't see the numbers come back, when I ran these statistics and I wasn't seeing numbers, I felt horrible. I'm like, no, this is false advertising. I got to shut it down. This isn't right. And it never occurred to me to change my marketing. I was also at that time going through some mental stuff of my own. This is the year that I had written Broken, and that was rattling me and sending me spiraling. And I was just barely keeping it together after I wrote Broken. And while the cyber convention sustained me for a while, it was not nearly large enough to sustain me through the mental healing I had in front of me. And what Brain to Books did, what it really did that people kept telling me over and over again, was Brain to Books gave hope to people who had none. It gave family to people who had none. And that I believed in, but I really missed the point. I didn't see the value in that at the time because of my own mental illness. And instead of shifting that perspective and attention and just changing my marketing, instead, I shut the whole thing down and then totally focused on my own mental illness. And it was in 2022 that I launched the Healing Garden. And I was thinking, and here's the thing with Brain to Books, when I launched it, it literally fell together into my lap. It was effortless. It was absolutely, it was everything a business tells you, you know, you got it right when. It was the perfect storm. And it was my first business out of the gate. So I thought, well, I'll just do it again. That was easy. And it was easy, but I couldn't just do it again. Brain to Books was a perfect formula. And it came together without any attempt, effort. I was selling before I had a brand built. It was the dream business circumstance. And I thought, oh, I'll just do it again. Nope. I did not. So that launched me into what did I do with Brain to Books that I didn't do any other time. And I didn't want it to be an accident. I wanted it to be on purpose. Now, here's the real in-your-face truth about it. This started me on this whole journey of it's very much the myth. It's the myth, the big myth of when you launch a business, are you grinding it? Are you pushing it out there and all these things? I didn't do that with Brain to Books. I did not do that. Everything they tell you have to do, I didn't do it. Everything they told you you had to do, I didn't do it. I had found accidentally, and I just nailed it on my very first attempt, the perfect magic math formula that generates abundance without any effort, just because you nailed the formula. I didn't know the formula. And I went, I know what it feels like. I know what it looks like. I experienced it. So I'm the person walking around going, there are unicorns. I've seen them. And people are like, oh, that doesn't exist. Oh, I had it in my hands. I've done it. It does exist. And that was in 2015. So here I am going, I got to get the formula back. How did I do it? And that really launched me on just a decade of scientific data and research on the abundance formula. It does exist. I had it in the palm of my hand. And when I read all these people giving you advice and telling you how to make money and how to do business, they're wrong. They're wrong. They're telling you the hamster wheel formula. So there's a slave wheel, hamster wheel formula where you manipulate, you lie, you cheat, you steal. And there's also the hamster wheel formula where you work and you grind and you are the slave of your own business. And then there's having it handed to you on a silver platter because you got the formula right. It's all about the physics. And I don't know the formula. And this is all it comes down to is, what's the formula? So, and I can tell you it's amazing when you look at the formula and where it is. So it's when the formula works, the physics flows. It's just a machine. Mathematical formulas are just physics machines. And when you have the right formula, I'll tell you, it works. And it's like you're rotating. It's exactly like you're pulling on that string of the lawnmower to get the mower to turn over, the engine to turn over, and it doesn't turn over. So you pull the string and it turns over and then it just stops and you pull the string and you just keep pulling the string. I've been pulling the string for 10 years. And this one time you don't look at the string. You just look at the mower, you snap your fingers and the motor turns on. That's the difference. That is the difference. It does exist. It's real. So I can feel when I get close to it. I can feel when I'm there. I can feel when I find the next component of the formula. And every time you get a part of this formula right, the engine turns over and you think for a minute that it's actually going to stay on. And you think, oh my God, did I find it now? And you need to understand, I have been trying to find this formula for 10 years. Nothing. Nothing. And when you have the formula spot on, and here it is, you have to know all the components. You have to have the components in the right order, and you have to have balance. You have to have alignment. You have to have everything in the right variable. But the core piece of all of this is you have to be stable, equal to, this is the part that everyone forgets, equal to your level. So if you level up and you don't level up balanced, the formula is not going to work. So you might launch a business at 20 years old, doing everything right, but you're at level 20. So when you get to be 45 and you're still running a level 20 formula, it's not going to work. You got to level up. You got to know how to level up. So that is literally one of the huge incentives behind everything that I'm doing. This is one of the things I was looking at with dialectical compression learning is, okay, so what's the order? Well, I got to stabilize the self. So I ran Brain to Books for 4 years. And then my best friend of that time, she died of brain cancer quite suddenly. And that was the end of it. I just couldn't. I couldn't. So we shut the whole thing down. I passed the torch over to some people and they within a year, they ran it into the ground and they loved me. They loved the company. But they said to me, Anna, you are the heart and the soul of the business. If you're not there, it doesn't run. And I went, ah, I'm the key piece to what I had built. So I'm like, well, let me go do this healing stuff and then I'll be back. Because the business owner, when the business owner levels up, the business owner has to show up. So when I launched Brain to Books, it was pre-broken. It was so I launched it. I had the formula all set. After I wrote Broken, however, the formula was not the same. I was different. And I unlocked this massive piece of myself that now needed to be dug out. So now I'm like, oh, I have to get out there. I have to do this. I have to solve this equation. And that's when I started to work on the self equation. Now, every business is run by the business owner, which is the foundation of the business. If the business owner is not stable, then the business doesn't run. So in order for the business to run, and I mean not just run, I don't mean just doing what every business is doing, running that hamster wheel and doing the slave work. I mean, you snap your fingers and the engine turns over. So you have to, it does exist. I had it in the palm of my hand. This is real. So I'm going, what did I do? What did I do? And of course, I had to put myself back together again. Now that leads into dialectical compression learning and the massive algorithm of the subconscious mind and the cognitive core. This is not light material. This is like the summation of the algorithm of the subconscious mind, which is what I put together in 2023. So in 2022, I launched the Healing Garden and the engine didn't turn over. And I'm like, what is wrong? And it would not turn on, not at all. And I went, okay, well, I'm definitely not the same. I need to fix me in the equation, which was no brainer because I wrote Broken and then I wasn't the right. So I knew that. That was easy peasy, I thought. So in 2023, I got the equation right for myself and it flew. It flew. It turned my brain on. My brain hummed like a machine and I went, wow, it was amazing. But then I realized you have the formula and I knew exactly what I was doing. Oh, I knew exactly what I was doing, but I wasn't about to sit there and tell anybody else what I was doing. Oh, no, no, that's the Ashwagandha curse. You don't walk around telling people what you're really doing. They'll laugh at you. I've only been doing this since 1984. I knew exactly what I was doing, but these were words I would never in my life say, ever. So I'm going to go ahead and pull up my handy dandy. Okay, that is my expo marker. And I'll tell you what I did. What I was really doing. Don't laugh at me. This is real fucking science, people. This is science, okay? I believed beyond a shadow of a doubt, 100%, I knew it. There is such thing as the Holy Grail, and I was going to find it. That's right. I decided to go for the quest for the Holy Grail. That is what I have been doing my entire life. I am dead fucking serious. I did it. I own the Holy Grail. I found it. I am it. It's amazing. I wanted the Holy Grail. Now, you can't walk around telling people you're looking for the Holy Grail, but I was. I told no one. This was my dirty little secret. I had a conversation with my father a few months ago. My father and I have had a very long relationship it's been a very strained relationship. And he's like, I have never understood you. And it was the first time in my life I really wanted to tell him the truth. That's because, Dad, I was looking for the Holy Grail my whole life. Really? I didn't tell him that. He still does not know. But I have, since 1984, been looking for the Holy Grail. I did the quest for the Holy Grail, and I found it. So this is how it looks. I'm sitting here in the 1980s, 1990s. I'm watching Monty Python in the quest for the Holy Grail. And I'm going, yes, yes, it's real. I know it is. I did not use them for any sources or clues, but it did like, you know, I did a lot of research on King Arthur. So King Arthur was a huge, big part of this. Of course, you can't do the Holy Grail on King Arthur. Come on. So I watched every reference to King Arthur like you would not believe. I devoured King Arthur. And I went, no, there's something here. There's something. What the fuck is going on here? I studied the Knight Templars. I studied everything. But there's more here. There's more here. I wasn't just looking for the Holy Grail. No, 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 no. I wanted the Kingdom of Heaven. What the hell was that about? It was something. Now, these all have a common denominator to them, which I'll explain here in a minute. So I'm like, no, this is something. This is like, I could see, because it's in the math. I could see the mathematical equations. First of all, they all came out as true. When every time I ran this algorithm, every one of them came back true. Not one came back a lie. Now, that was most interesting. I'm looking at this going, wait a minute. So I have the truth formula. I have it. I can look at something and go, oh, that's a lie. That's a logical fallacy. That's truth. Those are true. And I went, well, this is interesting. What's going on? So, of course, you know, Harry Potter comes into the world and she calls it the Philosopher's Stone. They call it the Sorcerer's Stone. And when she wrote the Sorcerer's Stone, I went, oh, ouch, that's a lie. Oh, but Philosopher's Stone, now that's interesting. That was really interesting. So that actually asked me a huge question. Why is Sorcerer's Stone really messed up and a lie, but why is Philosopher's Stone okay? So that asked me, or that got me asking, what is up with the Philosopher's Stone and why is that so much different than a Sorcerer's Stone? So then I looked into Nicholas Flamel. Oh, that's right. I did it. I looked up Nicholas Flamel. And the real Nicholas Flamel, the real one, his name was actually Albertus, I want to say it's Mundus, but I can't remember. I'll have to look it up. But Albertus, I remember the name Albertus. And it's funny because I looked up his books and everything a long time. And this was the most interesting thing. He was in the 9th century. And I couldn't help but notice that correlated with the Welsh tales of King Arthur. Now, isn't that fascinating? That the Holy Grail with King Arthur was around the same year as Albertus Mundus with his Philosopher's Stone. Now, he was an alchemist. So, of course, I studied alchemy. And this is where I noticed about 80% of the stuff coming out of the books was bullshit. But there was another 20% of all of this that was coming out. And it was not bullshit. There was truth there. There's the truth in them there hills. I'm like, there is something going on here. What is going on? So this is where I really started to dig. Now, I could see where there was truth. I could see where there was logical fallacy. I could see where there was lie. This took me a long time to figure out. This is what we call triaging history. So I went ahead and accumulated everything. I got everything together. And I did. I got everything together. And I realized you have the wisdom. You have the tree of wisdom. You have the tree of life. You have the world tree. I scoured everything from 1984 to 2024. I read all the legends. And what I was doing was mathematically looking for truth versus lie. And when you start, and this is beautiful, because if you were to mathematically map out all the stories that's in Irish mythology, it's all true. It's all true. Now, not all of it is concrete thinking, but it's all true. But there's gaps. Now, this is where it gets really interesting, because Irish mythology fills in the story where no other story fills in, none. Irish mythology is very unique. Irish mythology is the only mythology that actually references alien invasions. That's right. There is actually reference to alien invasions in Irish mythology. Now, people are going, oh, aliens built the pyramids. This is science, people. And I'm going, aliens did not build the pyramids, but sure, let's go ahead with that. What's really going on? So that was my question, is what's really going on? So once you take the conspiracy theory crap and you really throw that garbage away, it's not about what the conspiracy theorists say. It's more of them putting a circle around it and putting a question mark. Now, they come up with hypotheses. I don't know where they get their stuff from, but they come up with hypotheses. I'm not interested in their hypothesis. I'm interested in their data sheets. That's what I want to know about. So I'm looking at the Egyptian pyramids. I'm looking at Stonehenge. I'm looking at everything that lined up. And I have this question in my head when I'm a kid asking, what really happened to the Roman Empire? Because why the fuck is someone that advanced doing all of this insanely highly advanced technology and stuff like Vitruvius in the 4th century CE, and then suddenly death, and we're in the plague era, and it's the Dark Ages? Oh, what the hell happened? Your society does not just fall. Let me put it to you this way. When you are that good at building society, you don't fall, you don't fuck it up. So what the hell happened? Well, I found that answer. And when I found that answer, it made a whole lot more sense. And honestly, that was a key piece to all of this. So King Arthur, Holy Grail, Kingdom of Heaven, Philosopher's Stone, all of it came down to ancient Greece, which came from ancient Persia, which came back to the Egyptian mythologies, which linked over to the Druids, well, Celts, and that took up to Old Norse and also into Ireland. So I could see the spread of this thing that we weren't to name. And the thing that we weren't to name is called Magian. And Magian is talked about pre-Pliny the Elder. Pliny the Elder lived in 60 CE, and he was the last person to use the word Magian. The word Magian does not exist anytime after him. Now, he's talking in slander about this thing called Magian, and it's all, he wrote this, it's all Pythagoras' and Plato's fault. Now, I studied Plato, like, I found his curriculum. So I know what I'm talking about when it comes to Magian, because he's my master. And Pliny the Elder, who lived 600 years after Plato, is sitting here slandering him. That's like me trash-talking Shakespeare, you know, for reference. I'm going to sit there and trash-talk Shakespeare. But the way, now, if I were to trash-talk Shakespeare, the first thing you would probably say to me is, he lived 500 years before you. What do you know about Shakespeare? You didn't know him? No, it's 500-year age gap. I mean, come on. So Pliny the Elder was talking about Plato like I could talk about Shakespeare. He doesn't know him, but boy, did Pliny really hated Plato and Pythagoras. And he slandered them and called them insane, how they had this madness about Magian and how they went into Egypt for this Magian stuff. And it's magic. And he called it magic as a slanderous, trash-talking it. And that's why we have the word magic to this day, is because Pliny the Elder had a tantrum in his books where he slandered Plato and Pythagoras. Now, I knew a little bit about Plato. And I know a lot about the era of 60 CE, and I know a lot about all the bullshit that took place between 700 CE up to 100 CE. And I know the Trojans are dirty fuckers. So when I looked at all of this, I'm going, Pliny is one seriously messed up dude for being this angry about someone who's 500 years dead, which I really can't talk because I'm really pissed off about the Trojans, and they lived 2,500 years ago. Just saying, so I can kind of, I really am not in a position to sit there and badmouth Pliny. But the Trojans did shit to all of us. This is their fault. So Pliny really was pissed off about the Magian thing. Now, my question when I read this is, what the hell was going on with Magian? So that's when I went all the way back and I studied Magian. And I'll tell you, there are clues. Clues. Now, these are the clues that are not seen or known about by anybody anywhere unless you study philosophy, study ancient Greek philosophy, study Plato. And then you have to study sociology. You have to study ancient culture. You have to study psychology and ancient psychological studies. And then you have to study linguistics. You have to study ancient linguistics. But most of all, you have to, very, very important, study education. You see, education follows an evolutional scale, always, every time, no matter what. The evolutional scale that all of education always follows is this. After you learn it, you have to refine it. There's a refining process for education. Now, you can witness this refining process, and it begins around 10,000 BCE. That's really when we start to refine education. I said I was studying the entire educational history and where education comes from. I went all the way back to 100,000 BCE. I went back to, this is a cow, and we're going to milk it. I went all the way back. So in 10,000 BCE, that is when the first temple arose, which was really interesting to me. Now, prior to the first temple, we had something else. This got interesting. We didn't have a temple. You know what we had? Fire pits. Fire pits. All over the Taurus Mountains, there are these pyres, mounds of fire pits, so old, so large, that they're just mountains of ash. The fire pits in the Taurus Mountains. You know what they were doing? Because I know what they were doing. They were telling stories around the fire. And what do we do today? Campfire stories. Isn't that fucking amazing? Now that is human. That is our first school ever. Campfires and stories. At the very end of the movie, Cloud Atlas, there's a storyteller and a fire. This is human. Wow, that hit me hard. Now, they're on the Taurus Mountains. Do you know what else is on the Taurus Mountains? The start of two rivers, the Tigris Rivers and the Euphrates Rivers, which created the Fertile Crescent. I said, what the hell is in their water? Now, this is where it gets interesting. Because three times in history, genius rose up out of the Fertile Crescent. And every time. It started right there with the Taurus Mountains. And then civilization came out with the Fertile Crescent. And then it happened again after the Trojans wiped it out. They did it again. They did it again in the 8th century. 800 years after the Roman Empire wiped them out, they came back and did it again. And then they did it again. And I'm looking, I'm going, what the hell is in the water that no matter how many times you wipe it out in the Fertile Crescent, they come back. But they don't just come back. They come back with something different. They come back with the same thing every single time. They come back with Magian. Every time. Now I'm going, what the fuck is going on? Now, if you know the trade routes and the ancient civilizations with education, you can see precisely where Magian moved. And it leaves clues like the Uthbert blades. In the 700s. Now, Ibn Fadlan was an Arab follower at that point. He was a traveler who studied abroad, and he went on the Viking trade routes all the way up to the Norsemen, and he lived with them for approximately 50 years. So it is not at all ridiculous. It's actually quite logical for him to take Magian knowledge and give it to the people who created the swords around that time period to create the Uthbert blades. And that is how hypothesis. The Uthbert blades ended up being 500 years ahead of their time. Magian made its way because of Ibn Fadlan to travel from Persia, home of Magian, all the way over to the Norse. There are things like that that takes place all over the place, over and over again, where you can see Magian popping up. Vitruvius was a Magi. You see the mark of the Magi. You can see precisely where they were. You can see where civilization is really too advanced for its era, way ahead of the time, and then it marks out. Now, here's where it got interesting. Every single time Magian shows up, it vanishes. Every time. Every time. Now, this is where it gets really interesting. I shouldn't say every time. 1200 BCE, really important year in history. 1200 BCE is when it happened. Everything prior to 1200 CE, pretty smooth, straightforward, and very blunt. 1200 BCE is the year everything just goes wrong. So right now, 1138 BC, that is the year of the Trojan War. The first battle of the Trojan War is 1138 BCE. 1200 BCE is the fall of the Bronze Era. Really big deal. And right up until that point, you have the Marduk statue arriving in Babylon, same year. That was the first time you see the word Marduk appear. And everything prior to 1200 BCE, you see a very, very clear Magian timeline from 10,000 BCE up to 1200 BCE. Magian progression is clear, precise. Magi were everywhere. It was blossoming, and then Marduk happened. And then it wipes out. Now, at that time period, there were three brothers who created the cosmos. That got interesting. They created the cosmos. This is exactly what is written in every document, including one of the documents located in Harvard and NASA. Created the cosmos. Three brothers. Those three brothers went on to be deified in the Hindu religions. Really fascinating stuff. 1200 BCE, the Bronze Age collapses and Magian vanishes. Same time period is the Tower of Babel, which was really called Antinomachy at that time period, which is around the time, if you look at the Bible, that somebody somewhere around that era said, oh no, look at them. They are using their imagination and working together. There is nothing they can't do. Quick, stop it. And that's the Ashurbanipal curse. So from that point on, we have absolute disarray. No one worked together ever again, and now we all fight. Hypothesis. 12,000 BCE. 1138 BC, the Trojan War happened. And 500 BCE, that is when we start to notice this asshole named Hermes suddenly start to show up all over the place. That's when real shit hits the fan. Suddenly every god was Hermes. And every time anyone said, oh, look what God did. Oh, you mean Hermes. Now everyone, it was Hermes. You've heard of whitewashing. This was Hermes washing. Hermes washing was everywhere. It's obnoxious. Hermes Anubis, look it up for talking obnoxious. All the gods were called Hermes. So there were like 18,000 gods suddenly in 500 BCE, and all of them were named Hermes. I mean, we are talking really obnoxious. After the massive Hermes wash, and this lasted from 500 BCE up to 380 CE, literally 1,000 years of Hermes washing. 380 CE, the Council of Nicaea completed their fifth edition of the Bibliotheca, which they called the Bible. And the Hermes was consolidated into a single word, God. That's it. So God equals Hermes. Very well documented, very clear. And if you look at the timeline, it is, everyone knows. Everyone knows that there it is. That's what they're hiding. That's why you don't learn Roman history, is because that's what they're hiding. You find out by Virgil and about 18 other ancient Greek historians that some guy by the name of Aeneas invented the concept of Romulus. Its real name was Romus at that time, and then it got changed to Romulus. But that story is, you know, pretty consistent, and it pops up all over the place, and everyone between 700 BCE up to 500 BCE knew this. We all know it. Virgil also wrote about it. Okay, so it's about 1,000 years of everyone talking about, hey, you know that Romulus thing and Rome? Yeah, it doesn't exist. It's actually the Trojans. So we all know this. So when you look at all of this gorgeous history that's taking place, even before the concept of magic or Christians or Jews or the Romans, any of that stuff, all you're seeing is the progression of Magian. Now, Magian, and this is where it gets really interesting, Magian has a secret to it. Magian has a really, really solid secret. And it's something you don't understand until you're actually in it. And when you're in it, that is really when you start to understand what you're dealing with. Magian is advanced physics. We're talking really advanced physics. We are talking integrated mathematics. And we are talking quantum logic. Quantum logic is the be-all and end-all. Now, at that time period, there was something in the professions of the ancient Greeks referred to as logography. Logography eventually was replaced with something called attorneys. But logographers were not attorneys. Logographers were magi. They had an ability. I am a logographer. A logographer is somebody who has the ability to take quantum logic and write math with it. And then when you use quantum logic to write math, you can control physics. It's really fucking cool. That is logography. And when you put together metrics, you put together mathematics, you put together poetry and philosophy, you have the ability to literally write physics. This is referred to as the finger of God. Now, when you get into this world, what you end up walking into, this is where it gets really interesting, is something called abstract imagery. I talk a lot about abstract imagery. And abstract imagery is a few steps below solid matter, but definitely a number of steps greater than vision and dream. So it's a spectrum of how much matter and particles are formed from imagination. You can see it. And the stronger you develop this, the more math that there's involved in it, the more physics comes into it, the more you can literally draw in the atoms, build it together, and the more solid it becomes. Exactly like being able to use logic to turn water into ice. That's how it's done. Because you can control math with logos. Really cool stuff. Which is what the ancient Greeks referred to when they talked about logos. This is actually the logos they're referring to, hence logography. So it's a progression. This is a spectrum. And the spectrum that you have is the ability to literally move your math so that you can get the right physics you want by using and controlling molecules and atoms. It's really cool stuff. So you have these abstract images, and the closer it gets to the spectrum, the more solid and realistic it becomes. And now you're talking about the science of materialization. Really friggin' amazing stuff. Now, when you are talking about everything that is in the 10 stages, this is my science. This is like right what I'm studying right now is the spectrum. You have 10 stages of materialization. I hate to use the word materialization. You have 10 stages of abstract imagery being moved into material object. And the 10 stages begins with an idea or a thought. The last stage is an actual material possession. It's basically the ability to pull together the matter that you want in order to create it and put it into something solid. So right now, as I develop my skills, I am now a 7. Once it gets to 9, it has the ability to actually format and become something material. This is how Jesus's miracles work. This is literally the science of miracles. Now, this entire concept, there's two things to it. The first thing is the language, and the second thing is going to be the abstract. So this is actually alchemy. This is real alchemy. This is where alchemy comes from. So now I'm going back to the Philosopher's Stone, and I'm looking at that guy named Albertus Mundus, and he's sitting there talking about phosphorus and mercury, but I speak ancient Greek. So I know when you say mercury, yeah, it does not mean the metal. It means the god Hermes. And when you're talking about phosphorus, you're actually referring to not the metal, you are referring to the god Phosphorus, whose name in Latin was Lucifer, which means light bringer. So in order to change this asshole Hermes back to Phosphorus, well, back to gold, god, you need phosphorus. So we're going to translate this one more time. God was gold. It means gilded one because they had magian, which was the ability, and it produces an after effect of having glowing skin, hence gilded. As a result, that's why we associate God with gold, because of the gilded from the magian that appears on your skin. It's really cool. So when you have a god that is no longer golden, it's because they lose the magian. Phosphorus was the god of abundance, and his other name was Plutus. And of course, we all know that asshole Hermes, whose other name was Mercury. So in alchemy books, when they say to change Mercury back over to phosphorus, or I'm sorry, to change Mercury to gold, you need phosphorus. You have to change Mercury to phosphorus. It's really, really interesting when you start to look at it from a mythological point of view. And here's the real, real kicker. When you dig out all of this really uber awesome stuff and you read the code embedded by Plato, one of the things that's talked about in every single story, when you look at the entire map of all the mythologies, is there was a god war and the true god was usurped. And he lost all of his powers when he was usurped. And this asshole's Hermes was replaced in his stead. So the Philosopher's Stone is actually referring to abstract imagery in Magian and the return of the Magian, the academic discipline of all of this really cool stuff. When you are working in alchemy and you are trying to detail what it is you're looking at, this is where you start to see the Tree of Life. This is where you start to see the World Tree. This is where all of this abstract imagery starts to really come into place. And the first thing you have to be careful of is, who are you going to talk about this stuff with? Who are you going to tell this to? You do not want this out. It was out, and that's what happened in the 1200 BCE when everything went to shit. You do not want Magian to get out. It has a long history of being abused. So Magian is the science of controlling and creating physics with logic via math. When you speak logic on the quantum level, you're actually ordering up math, which moves the physics in any way you want, just by using words. So words actually commands physics. That's what we're talking about here. It is the science of spell work, if you really want to call it that. I refer to it as the science of mathematical formulas via logic. Yeah, it's mathematical formula via logic. So your logos can actually move your mathematical formulas to dictate which way your physics is going to move. It's really cool. This is the foundation of psychological physics, which you don't get into until you get to the end of ontological physics at the end of philosophy. So after you become a master philosopher, you unlock ontological physics, but here's the catch. You have to have Greek philosophy. This will not work if you are a Roman. This will not work if you are a Trojan. It is exclusive to ancient Greek psychology. With ancient Greek psychology, you unlock ontological physics. After you unlock ontological physics, you get psychological physics. After you get psychological physics, you get about seven other academic disciplines. Those seven disciplines lead to logography. That is the academic path of all of this really cool stuff. But don't worry, it's completely locked, and there is absolutely no way anyone unethical can even reach this stuff. And I don't teach it. You get your ass to the logos if you want to see this stuff. So it's perfectly safe. It's not going to fall into the wrong hands ever again. The Ashavana and I worked really hard to make sure that never happens again. But what we're looking at now, and this is where it gets really, really just fascinating, is when we're talking about words like the Holy Grail, and when we are talking about terminology like the kingdom of heaven, these are metaphorical. It's actually code, Ashavana code, for what we really mean. Now, you don't understand this stuff unless and until you become an Ashavana, unless and until you complete ontological physics and you are in psychological physics. So it's only after you achieve the ethical vows of the knighthood, which is the Holy Grail, that you finally have the language unlocked enough that you can understand how to speak the alchemical language. Now, this is where it gets interesting. If you do not pass these tests and these ethical trials, it will always sound like garbage and jargon to you. It will sound like legend. We designed it this way. It's called the Ashavana curse. So you'll hear it and you will think it's a story. You will think it's legend. You will think it's material. That's the point we want you to. You will never understand this accurately, which is how magic came into existence. It is the botched translation of something they have not been able to access because they don't understand it. So they are what Plato called pine cone holders. So you have an entire world of pine cone holders chasing material possession because they don't understand alchemy as it truly is, which is an abstract science. This is the abstract sciences of Magian. This is the esoteric sciences of what was inside of Alexandria, which is why the Library of Alexandria was burned to bury all of this. Quite extraordinary.